Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at
live and in living color in Nashville, Tennessee.
Talking about what's important to you.
It's a touchdown for the Titans.
First one.
This is the Chase and Big Joe Show.
Well, Andy freaking God.
With Chase McCabe and Big Joe Dubin.
Good, great, grand, wonderful.
Brought to you by Regal Realty Group. Release the... On 102.5 and 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app.
Chase and Big Joe, afternoon edition. Chris Billman and company today, but it's just me. It's Chase McCabe here in the 5 o'clock hour. And as always, at 5 on Fridays, we talk to Chad Withrow. Outkick, Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow is the show. Chad, what's up? How are you?
Chase, you are the worker, my man. You are always there. Punch the time clock. Never leave. Joe gets the hour off. Look at this. Look at you leading into a weekend once again. Hey. Working, doing your job. Congrats to you, man. You're always doing something.
It's what I have to do, but somebody's got to do it, and I'm happy to be the one to do it. So now the NFL season, unfortunately, is in the books. This is the first weekend we're not going to have football, and I'm depressed. I think everybody else is depressed. I know we got spring ball and arena ball and all that stuff coming, but it'll be a while before college football and the NFL comes back. But the Super Bowl overall, just what were your thoughts on Kansas City winning their third Super Bowl championship in 5 years? And then we'll get into San Francisco and how they handled things. But your overall thoughts on the game?
Yeah, it's I've used this comparison, but to me, Patrick Mahomes is John Wick. You can't kill him.
Yeah,
I mean, and we saw that all year. Their offense was bad for large chunks of this season. And they found a way to figure it out in the postseason and came together and got enough done to make it happen. They were terrible in the first half offensively, even in the Super Bowl. But if you give Patrick Mahomes a chance, he goes 8-for-8 on that final drive. He picks up a fourth down with his legs. He makes the plays to win the game. And it was so predictable to see that they were going to find a way to win it. So that's what Mahomes is now. You know, he is the Brady of the NFL at this point. And you just felt like if the 49ers don't close it out, when they didn't get that 3rd and 4, where they could have milked a lot of the clock, pretty much all of it at that point, I felt like this thing's going to overtime at least. You know, I thought they might win in regulation when they got down to the 9 on the Kelce play. But I thought it's going to overtime at least. And if not, they're going to go on and win it in overtime. And that's exactly what happened. So Mahomes is the guy. There's no denying that, and it's impossible to kill that guy. And when he gets paired with a great defense like they had this year, a truly elite defense, that is bad news for the rest of the league.
Is, in your mind, could Patrick, I mean, surpass Brady just because not only the championships, I mean, you know, put those aside, that's obviously a part of the conversation, but the skill, the arm, he's got a better arm. He's got a bazooka for an arm. And it almost seems like his IQ has even matched Brady's at this point. And he's only, what, 28 years old?
Yeah, look, I think that he's on path to absolutely surpass him. And I'm not saying just titles, because championships cannot be the only metric for a quarterback.
Agreed.
Right? It's not just going to be who has the most rings in the end. Let's say I'm conservatively right now saying I think that Mahomes gets 5. Okay, let's say he gets 5 or 6. So he's either 2 or 1 ring behind Brady. If he is even remotely close to this pace he's on statistically, when you look at Brady's career, he's going to be far better than Brady. He's on path to be the greatest of all time. Brady really had 3 separate eras of his career. And in that first era, he was a game manager that was just simply there to stay out of the way of that great defense. And he won championships in that era, being a game manager, being kind of a Brock Purdy, how we view him. Patrick Mahomes has been the star of that team since he started at quarterback. He has been the driving force of that team throughout. If this continues and he gets, let's say, another era with a different Travis Kelce, they've already won two without Tyreek Hill, then I think he's going to pass Brady. If not for titles, then as the greatest of all time, I really think this is what we're witnessing right now, barring some, you know, injury that sets him back for a season or two or something like that. I think when Mahomes is done, we're going to say he's the greatest quarterback we've ever seen in the history of the NFL.
Talking to Chad Withrow from Outkick. And the other thing, too, and I asked John McClain about this earlier this week, Spagnuolo, I mean, what he's done with the defense. I mean, now he's got four rings as a defensive coordinator. He was a terrible head coach, but he has been a Hall of Fame-worthy defensive coordinator. And I know they don't really put a ton of coordinators in the hall just based on that, but I feel like he's certainly made a case for it.
Yeah, I was a little surprised that he doesn't get a lot more looks for a head coach. I know he was bad with the Rams, and I know he's an interim coach at one point, too. But, yeah, he's been terrific. I mean, he's worth every dollar that they pay for him in Kansas City. And maybe he's one of those guys that just realized, hey, I'm much better as a coordinator. I'd rather do this and make a living just running a defense, and this is where I'm more comfortable. And if so, more power to him. But, I mean, that defense this year for the Chiefs, really, it's what got them to the playoffs in the position they were in, because they carried the offense much of the season. Then when the defense needed the offense, they came through in big situations in Buffalo and big situations in Baltimore, even though the defense or the offense was shut down in the second half of that game. When they needed them in the second half in overtime against the 49ers in the Super Bowl, the offense came through. But the story of this team was the defense. And twice, they had a chance, the 49ers I'm talking about, to put the game away. And Spags heated them up, and he got to Brock Purdy quickly and force an incompletion. Once on third and four that would have iced the game, they could have run more clock. And once in overtime where Juwan Jennings gets open on that route, but the pressure was too quick, and they had to throw it away. And that was the difference in the game. It gave Mahomes a chance. Because of that, the Chiefs are champions once again.
So Jared has used the phrase pants pooper when referring to Kyle Shanahan, the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers. He blasted him for taking the ball in overtime, which in traditional overtime you would, but with the new overtime rules, probably should have kicked. I'll give him that. But do you feel like that Kyle Shanahan was the one that lost the game for the 49ers, or was it that the Chiefs were just that good and Mahomes is that good and they won the game?
I mean, I think first and foremost, it's Mahomes is that good and the Chiefs were that good and they won the game. And to win a Super Bowl, you got to get there, right? It's about Marv Levy also. But Shanahan gets there. He's been there twice. He's done a great job with the 49ers. So let me lay that out first. Big issues I have in this game, though. George Kittle, and I know that his shoulder was banged up throughout, and he actually left the sideline at one point because of a shoulder injury. But two catches for George Kittle is not enough.
Yep.
And they didn't run the ball enough. I think there are times where Kyle Shanahan gets a little too carried away with the pass and does not run the ball enough. I think he should have run it more. Yes, I think he should have kicked off to start the overtime with the rules. But I understand the thinking. At least he had an explanation about what his analytics team was telling him and what they're thinking. So I have no big objection to that. He's got a great defense. They should have stopped, you know, the Chiefs to help him at least a field goal. He had a chance down there to score a touchdown. We would have been saying a lot of different things had that not happened. But, I mean, Jared's right in this. I don't buy it. But we all knew the narrative was going to be that Kyle Shanahan can't win the big one. You know, you lose the second Super Bowl and you haven't won one, suddenly you can't win the big one. Andy Reid had that knock for years about NFC Championship games. And the one Super Bowl he got to with the Eagles, he lost. So that's going to follow Shanahan around until he wins one. But I absolutely believe that he will win one before he's done. He's on a great path right now.
Talking to Chad Withrow from Outkick, you buying any of this Brandon Ayuk stuff and what may happen there? Because, you know, Titans fans perk up whenever a receiver gets mentioned that could be on the move.
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, T. Higgins, Brandon Ayuk, the Titans need somebody. You know, we know that. You know, they need a big-time receiving threat. Look, if I'm the Titans, I'm just saying this for the Titans, and I don't know what's going to happen there with San Francisco, but I kind of go into every offseason with this same thing. You got to have your eyes open to any and all possibilities. I think it's a huge mistake to shut off any type of situation that could improve your roster. Whether that be because of a guy's attitude or he's too expensive or whatever, you have to evaluate everything. You can't go into any situation with personnel and say, absolutely not, I'm not going to do it, it's a non-starter. I think that's a bad way to do business, the NFL. You got to have an open mind. You got to go into it with open eyes and decide whether or not the situation works out for you. But we know that the Titans roster right now, they're in need of a big-time pass catcher. If Will Levis is going to develop, and if he's going to become the franchise quarterback for this team, which he has not yet, I don't think anybody can sit here and say that they fully believe that he is going to be a great quarterback right now. And I don't think they can sit here and say they fully believe he's going to be a terrible NFL quarterback based on what we've seen. What we've seen is a guy that has injury issues that does not have a great pass catcher right now. They need to find him a legit number one option. I think that's step number one. And someone that can develop with him, a younger guy like Ayuk would be great. But they need to find somebody for Will Levis. So I hope they have an open mind with that.
Before I get more into the Titans stuff, I did want to ask about this. They fired 49ers fired Steve Wilks as their defensive coordinator earlier this week. Did you kind of feel like he was a scapegoat just because of how that game ended? And also the reports that apparently Shanahan did it over Zoom and not face-to-face kind of rubbed me the wrong way. But what were your thoughts on Steve Wilks getting let go as the defensive coordinator in San Francisco?
Yeah, I think the writing was kind of on the wall. I remember Shanahan, I think in the Vikings game, he had an issue with an all-out blitz that was called at one point by Steve Wilks and said so after the game, the post-game press conference. So I think there were some cracks in the facade and there were some questions about decision-making with Steve Wilks from Kyle Shanahan. So that last drive probably cemented it. Now, Steve Wilks is a guy who blitzes all the time. So, I mean, if you hire him, I think you know you're hiring a guy who's going to be super aggressive and probably blitz more times than maybe Kyle Shanahan wanted, given that defense. I think the risk here, Chase, is that you've got really good personnel on defense, up and down. I mean, Greenlaw, Bosa, Warner. I mean, look at that defense. It's really, really good. Eric Armstead, who I know is undergoing surgery at the end of the year. But you don't want to waste that group of players because you're constantly changing the defensive coordinator where they're constantly being led by someone different and looking at a different system. And I don't think the system's going to change that dramatically, but you got to be aware of that. Now, if that's just a, hey, we're a great defensive coordinator away from winning a Super Bowl because we were that close with this guy, then sure, go ahead and make the move. But I would just say buyer beware on constantly changing defensive coordinators every year through Shanahan.
We'll have more with Chad Withrow coming up next. It's Chase and Big Joe in for Stillman and Company today, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe in today, Stillman and Company, a Chase and Big Joe in the afternoon, in for Jared as he is traveling and continuing our conversation with Chad Withrow from Outkick. Now we start with the Titans. You know, you mentioned finding that receiver, but Brian Callahan putting his staff together. I want to start on the defensive side of the ball, actually, because Denard Wilson, his press conference, and I know you can't take a whole lot away from an introductory press conference, but I felt like I was ready to run through a wall after listening to him. He's a fiery guy. I feel like that does a lot for Jeffrey Simmons and other guys on that team. What was your takeaway with Wilson when he was introduced as a defensive coordinator?
Well, it's the most important hire for Brian Callahan. So let me put that out there first. You hire a head coach that's a specialist on one side of the ball or the other, their most important hire is going to be the coordinator on the opposite side of the ball. So Brian Callahan is an offensive guy. He's a quarterback guy. He's going to head the offense. He's going to call plays. He's going to be the offensive guy. You've got to hire a defensive head coach, not just a coordinator, but a defensive head coach. And I think that he seemed a part of that. I'm with you, Chase. I was very impressed with his initial press conference. And if he's – I think calling plays in a game is so just inherently you have it or you don't based on not just experience, but I do think that there's some God-given talent to it that you can see things unfolding and just know when to do what. I think Steve Spurrier is a great example on offense. Steve Spurrier, you know, wasn't the biggest film study guy, but he had a great knack for when to call what in the course of the game, and that comes from him playing quarterback as well. But if he has that, I think when we saw him that introductory press conference, it's going to go a long way. It's the least important hire for Brian Callahan because they got to get the defensive side of the ball right. Vrabel was a defensive guy. You know, he had his hands all over the defense for the Titans, and he did a poor job of hiring offensive coordinators after Arthur Smith. So you got to get that defensive coordinator hire right. That's the word of warning for Brian Callahan. If he does, I think the Titans are going to look really smart for hiring Callahan and for Callahan for hiring this defensive coordinator.
So, Brian Callahan, the head coach, he brings in Nick Holtz to be the offensive coordinator. We know that Callahan's going to call the plays, all of that. And everything, to me, is tied to can you figure out if Will Levis is the franchise quarterback? And we simply don't know. You said, you know, I think you put it best in the last segment of, you know, you don't know that he is that guy, but you don't necessarily think that he's a bust at this point. You just got to figure out where he is. And so, how do you see that relationship with Holtz and Callahan working as they develop Will Levis and develop a relationship with him?
I mean, I think it's all about supporting the quarterback now, right? I mean, that's offensive line, that's pass catchers, and that's coaching. So that is Callahan and Holtz at this point to get together on what is the plan for Will Levis. Look, the offensive plan and what you want to do is important, but Brian Callahan is a quarterback-centric offensive coordinator. This is not going to be a run-first team. We all agree with that. This is no longer the Derrick Henry-led type. They're going to center their offense around the quarterback. That's the smart thing to do in today's NFL. So if they're going to do that, they need to know exactly what Will Levis, what his strengths are. They need to play to those strengths. They need to try to avoid whatever his weaknesses are as much as possible. And develop a plan with him in mind where Will Levis has input on what the plan is going to be moving forward. I think first and foremost, that is the most important thing. I will say for Callahan, I'm a little bit concerned that a first-time head coach is also going to be his own first-time play caller on offense. That's a lot. I think we're underscoring him calling plays and being the head coach. He's never been a head coach, and correct me if I'm wrong, he's never been a play caller.
Correct.
Because in Cincinnati, the head coach calls their own plays also, Zach Taylor. So that's a big jump. And maybe he's going to be great at it, and we're not going to be able to tell a thing, but I think that's a lot of responsibility. It's one thing when you've been a head coach before or you've been a play caller before and you elevate and you want to do both. It's a totally different thing to do both on game day. So I'll be fascinated to watch how Callahan manages that, having been a first-time coach and now a first-time offensive coordinator play caller.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that. I'm curious of it. But at the same time, we've seen, like, all these guys that come out of this tree, this, you know, McVay, you know, Shanahan tree, that's kind of the process. Zach Taylor had never called plays until he became the head coach. Mike McDaniel never called plays until he became the head coach. And now you have Brian Callahan doing the same thing. And so I feel like they kind of get prepared to do that as they go through the process of being a coordinator. And I mean, I guess we can assume that that's what's going to happen with Nick Holtz if things go well. So I guess I'm not maybe as concerned as you are on that because I've seen how this process has worked in this tree.
Yeah, Kevin O'Connell too, right? Yep. Came from that tree and does the same exact thing. I'm amazed by the hit rate. If you compare this to the hit rate of Saban assistants in college football, it's astronomically higher for McVay, Shanahan descendants, right? For these young guys that are offensive-minded guys to succeed as head coaches. It really didn't happen for Saban until Jimbo Fisher and eventually Kirby Smart. So a lot of these guys work out. There's going to be someone who doesn't at some point, I feel like, right? I hope it's not Callahan. I hope he's another one of the guys that works out. I'm just saying that's a lot for anyone, and everyone is built different. Hopefully Callahan's just like a number of these other guys who have done the same thing and followed the same path, and he can have similar success.
We're talking to Chad Withrow. So you mentioned earlier about, you know, the offense, and this is going to be more of a pass-centric offense and not the Derrick Henry-led offense. So in your mind, are you completely closing that door that Derrick Henry is gone, or could you see a scenario that he gets to free agency, he hits the open market, maybe the market is not as friendly as he thought it was going to be, and then the Titans might go, hey, we'll give you a 1 or 2 year deal with incentives and, you know, maybe $3 million as a base salary or something like that, that coming back, being a part of this, even though it's going to be a different type of offense, still could be the best fit for Henry.
Yeah, I'd be shocked if he's not gone. I really would. I don't think it's anything about Nashville or the Titans organization. I think he loved Mike Vrabel. I think he loved his time here. But I think he would take less to go somewhere else also. I think he just feels like it's time to move on. He wants to go to a contender. Titans are not a contender right now. He's talked a lot about, you know, I want to have a chance to win a Super Bowl. That's what he wants to do. So, maybe, but I don't see any scenario there's some sort of hometown discount or even Ty goes to the Titans. I think Ty will go to the team that has a better chance at winning if there's another option there. And he's going to have options. So, I'll never say never, and I'll put like 5% out there that he comes back to the Titans, but it would absolutely shock me if Derrick Henry didn't just decide, hey, I've done what I can here. They're rebuilding. They have a new quarterback who got hurt before the end of the year. They got a new head coach. I like the old head coach. I like the old system. It's time for me to move on. I think that's the way he feels. And I think that's what we're going to eventually see. And I'd be surprised if it's time with a team that we're all saying, hey, they got a good shot at winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah, like Baltimore or something like that. But what kind of percentage would you give with he also like the old offensive coordinator that's no longer a head coach, Arthur Smith, if maybe, say, Tannehill and Henry somehow wind up in Pittsburgh?
I think that's an interesting situation. I also saw the betting market had Justin Fields as the favorite. His favorite landing spot in Vegas was to Pittsburgh, which surprised me as well. I think Kenny Pickett's going to go in as the starter. And I think they're going to go find Ryan Tannehill as a good example of like a high leverage backup where you know that if it's a tenuous starting quarterback spot, if that guy is not good, you can immediately go to a veteran, and that would be Tannehill with Arthur Smith. I think Pittsburgh would make sense for him. Also, they had the defense, they need an offense. They got to the playoffs miraculously by playing musical chairs at quarterback and Mason Rudolph's playing quarterback. Fired their offensive coordinator, and they're still a playoff team this year. So, I think that'd be a good spot. You know, I know Buffalo's cap room is weird, and they don't have much, but I've always thought Buffalo would be great for Derrick Henry also. They need that facet of their offense to click, and I think he'd be incredible in that weather in Buffalo and the way they play. I could see any three of those spots being perfect for Henry. But the bottom line is I just think he's going to go somewhere that should win quicker than what we're going to see with the Titans next year.
So I have to throw in a college question because we don't talk a lot of Boston College football here, but when you hire Bill O'Brien, that certainly gets your attention. Billy O going back to college as a head coach. What do you think about that move by a team that hasn't won 8 games since like 2009?
Yeah, so also they hired Tom O'Brien's son. I saw that Tim O'Brien was hired. I think it's just Bill's little brother. No, it's Tom's son. No relation to Bill, which is crazy, on that same staff. Look, when Jeff Hafley left to be defensive coordinator for the Packers, I didn't really have a big reaction because Boston College is not a good college football job. So when I see like that to me makes sense, right? Head coach of Boston College takes the Packers defensive coordinator job. I think that could happen at any point in time. And that's not just NIL driven. But if someone can make it work, I think it is someone like a Bill O'Brien, right? We saw Tom O'Brien make it work. They're in a tough spot where they're located and in their conference. But I like it for Boston College because I think they need a little bit of buzz about them. I mean, they are, you know, what, 6th or 7th probably in that market of sports things that people care about.
Right.
Maybe even further down the list. So you got to get someone people know it's going to make you care about it. And if you win, you know, eyeballs will follow in a market that size. So I really like the move for Boston College. Makes a ton of sense. And I like it for Bill O'Brien to, at this point in his career, with all that he's done, he wants to embrace that type of challenge. I can't wait to watch.
Going to be interesting for sure. Chad, appreciate it as always. I rarely get to talk to you on the air, so good to be able to do that. And I know you'll join Jared next week.
Chase, always fun chatting with you, whether it be on air or off air. I appreciate it. Have a great weekend, and hopefully Big Joe has a great weekend as well.
Absolutely. That's Chad Withrow from Outkick joining us here. Always join Stillman and Company every Friday at 5, but Chase McCabe in today for Jared Stillman. Right now, caller number 5 at 615-737-1025. will win a pair of tickets to see Dierks Bentley at Bridgestone Arena on September 7th. 615-737-1025, and you'll win a pair of tickets to see Dierks Bentley at Bridgestone Arena. This is going to be an awesome show, so get in there. Caller number five right now. Chase McCabe in for Jared today. Coming up next, we keep the football talk going, usually on Fridays at 9:30 or 10. Chris Sanders, Forever Titans wide receiver, joins Big Joe and me. He's going to join us next. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans coaching staff and all things going on with that. Here on Chase and Big Joe in for Stillman and Company today, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Chase and Big Joe, afternoon edition, in for Jared Stillman today on Stillman and Company, but just Chase. But guess what? I got some help. I got some company. Our man Chris Sanders joins us now, usually on our show, which is 9 to 11 weekdays. He joins us on Fridays at around 10 o'clock, and we talk some Titans football with him. And Chris, you and I were just talking before we came on the air that Denard Wilson, the new Titans defensive coordinator, I'm ready to I don't know what I can do to help him, but I'm ready to run through a wall. After that press conference, he seems like a guy that would be a lot of fun to play for.
Man, he is. And the one thing I love about him is he's got a quiet confidence. And when I say a quiet confidence, is that's a guy that you want, if you was to get into a fight, you want him with you because you know he'll fight at any time. But just listening to his press conference, here's some of the things that I love that he said. He said, number one, iron sharpens iron. What does that mean? That means I can't do it on my own. And then he says, number two, he says, we want to be an attacking defense, but also balanced. So when you have a coach that's clear cut on what he wants to do, but has that quiet confidence, but then also he's a guy that you want to be in a fight with, that if you get in a fight, he's going to be right there with you. Those are the kind of coaches that you want.
Yeah. And so I thought immediately, and TD and I talked about this too, that a guy like Jeff Simmons, that he's a fiery guy in his own right. Like he don't take no stuff. You know, you know what I'm saying? Like I feel like that's a good marriage with Denard Wilson.
I mean, it is, because now you have a fiery coach and you have a fiery player. And when you have that type of combination, it's going to spew into everybody else. It's going to have that same confidence because, you know, I don't know if you remember coach. What was the defensive line coach that I had in 1990 when we played? I can't remember his name.
Jim Washburn?
Jim Washburn. Jim Washburn was a coach that, man, he fired plays up. He had guys that wanted to run through a wall. Number one, he had a relationship with these guys, and he just brought that fiery attitude. Then now you got Denard Wilson, that's the defensive coordinator, that has that same tenacity, that same attitude, that's going to push players, develop players, but also get them in the right position to be physical and to be an attacking defense.
Chris Sanders is with us here on the program. And then on the other side of the ball, Nick Holes comes in as the offensive coordinator. And we know that Brian Callahan, the head coach, is going to call the plays, and that's fine. But what is, in your mind, what does that dynamic, that relationship look like?
I think, you know, with Nick Holes, I think he's more of the scheme guy. I mean, I know, you know, the head coach, Brian Callahan, is going to be calling the plays, but you look at Nick Holes, he has a wealth of experience with a lot of different offenses. He had the spread, the West Coast offense, the no huddle, a lot of mesh concepts. So when you have, you know, Brian calling the plays, but you're working with Nick Holes with the scheme side of it, I just think it's a recipe for success because you're bringing a wealth of knowledge. You're bringing a wealth of experience, but also you're bringing two guys together that can work together and bring together a potent offense. So now the key is, once you have two guys like that, now you bring in the players, you bring in some more running backs, you bring in some more wide receivers, you have a great offensive line, and then you have Nick Holes and Brian Callahan with their knowledge and their wealth of experience. I think it's a recipe for success, Chase.
Brian Callahan said on Wednesday during the press conference that it's been very important to him to keep quarterback Will Levis in the loop with everything they're doing from the very beginning. To me, that shows that he is putting all his eggs in that number eight basket with Will Levis to make him the guy. And when he got the job, he was probably told, like, he's the guy. Go make him the guy. Why is that so important, so to be so upfront with his quarterback of like, hey, man, this is what we're doing?
You know, see, the thing about it is you want a quarterback to feel comfortable. And the way you make him feel comfortable is you do comfortable things. What is that? Let him know what we're doing. Let him know the hires. Let him know the offense. Show him the playbook. This is where we're going. This is the vision. So you when you have a quarterback that believes in his head coach, when you have a quarterback that believes in his OC and they have a relationship, then I think that it's going to be special. Look at the situation with Mahomes and Andy Reid. Look at that. I mean, those guys are talking, they're communicating. You know, they never go outside of what they're doing. Then they have a situation with Will Levis and Brian Callahan, and you have Nick Holtz, and they're communicating, they're talking, you know, they're keeping them in the loop, they're doing all these things to make him feel comfortable. I think that Will Levis is going to go from to year two, and I think he's going to do some great things.
Will sat down with Jared at the Super Bowl and, you know, talked about year one and some of the things that he learned. But to me, he seems like a really smart guy, like a guy that, you know, just studies the game and, you know, doesn't like to make the same mistakes more than once. But what would be your advice to Will Levis as he goes into the offseason? I know you and Jared discuss the whole, like, not, you know, taking a little time off and kind of getting his body right. And I don't have a problem with that at all. But What are you giving advice-wise to Will Levis that he should be doing, even if he's not on the field, even if he's not necessarily in the weight room?
You know, this is what I do. And the one guy that I really, really love is Jerry Rice. And everybody talks about what makes Jerry Rice so special. Jerry Rice said this. He said on the offseason, he doesn't work on the things that he does well. He works on his weakness. So what he does is he turns on film. He says, you know what, if I got to catch the ball better, if I got to run better routes, if I struggle with this, I want to work on my weakness. The one thing that Willis would do, the reason why I said that illustration, the one thing, if I was Willis, I would focus on what do I need to do better? What's my weaknesses? If it's reading coverages, if it's going through my progression, is it my drop step? Is it the 5-step drop, 7-step drop? What am I looking at? How to, you know, lie with my eyes? All those things that he needs to improve on. So I wouldn't work on the things that I'm good at. I would focus on the things that I need to get better at. And if Will Levis has that type of attitude, listen to his coaches and work on his weakness, now you have a quarterback that go from being good to being one of the best quarterbacks in the league.
Chris Sanders is with us here on the program. They've brought back some familiar names on the coaching staff, including, I think, a guy you played with, Steve Jackson.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my God. I love that dude. And the reason why I love that dude is, listen, this is why I'm so excited about the whole thing. Look at the kind of coaches that they're bringing in, fiery coaches. And when you look at him, that's how he was in practice. When I first came in 1995, our secondary, that secondary was crazy. We had Blaine Bishop, Marcus Robinson, all those guys that were fiery. So now you're bringing in him that's fiery and has an attitude that pays attention to details. I just think that he is in a great hire because he's going to bring enthusiasm. He's relational with the players, but also he's a fiery guy that's going to hit you square in the nose.
How much does it make a difference at all that you have a former DB's coach that's now the defensive coordinator? Because we know that this team definitely needs some work in the secondary.
Yeah, they do. But the thing about it is you have a whole bunch of guys that are going to work together. And I think that when you go from a defensive back coach and become a defensive coordinator, you're still a part of the scheme. You're just not calling defense. But the thing about it is when you're in that situation, when you're a cornerback or a cornerback's coach or a DB coach and you're learning from the defensive coordinator, then now you get in that position. You just take what you learn and then now you know how to call plays. So I don't think it's any different. I just think it's different positions.
Chris Sanders is hanging out with us here on the show. And Chris, you know, we're going to have a lot of weeks where we're talking about receiver, the position that you played very well for a long time. And we've talked to you about T. Higgins, and then what do they do in the draft? Do they take a Dunze or Malik Nabers, you know, one of those guys? Yeah. Am I getting ahead of myself and getting too excited that I feel like they're going to get somebody that's going to make us all feel like, yes, they found that guy?
Ooh, but you know what guy I'm looking at is Ayuk from the 49ers. Have you seen what's going on over there?
I have, and I like him. I loved him coming out of Arizona State.
Yes, and you know he's not happy over there. He's been disgruntled. I know he put some things on Facebook or you know Instagram and saying he's disgruntled. But if you look at this draft, Chase, it's rich in wide receivers. I mean, it is. And I've been studying a lot of these guys. Everybody knows about Harrison from Ohio State. You got Nabers from LSU. You got Adams from Washington. But let me talk about some second and third rounders that a lot of people are not talking about. You got Troy Franklin from Oregon. You got Ladd McConkey from Georgia that nobody's talking about. You got Walker from North Carolina. You got Coleman from Florida State. And here's a guy that I love, Leggett from South Carolina.
Yes.
Man, let's go.
I was hoping you were going to say his name.
Yeah, what you say?
I saw somebody did a mock draft for the Titans. And like a lot of stuff can happen between now and then. But they had them taking Malik Nabers at 7 and then Leggett in like the 4th round. And I was like, oh,
he ain't gonna be there.
I don't think he'll be there.
But you're talking about a polished receiver. You're talking about a guy, and this you correct me if I'm wrong, that is maybe a little step lower than Nabers. Nabers is a baller.
Yeah.
But Leggett is right there because he's an all around wide. He's tough. He can catch the ball, run routes, and I get excited about that. Can't TD loves him. You love him. I love him. Let's go get this dude.
Well, and I think too, Chris, that you know they're with the receivers and how deep it is in this draft. Indeed. That you could find that guy that AJ yep. Brown. That you know I know he was a second rounder, but that you could find somebody like that. You just gotta do your due diligence and make sure you make the right pick.
Yeah, and that's the key is you got to make the right pick because we don't want to have a situation to where you take a receiver at say the third round and he doesn't pan out. We got to make sure we get impact players, and I think that with this draft, the guys that I just named, you can get an impact player to come in and help right away. We don't know the situation with Burks. We don't know if Burks is going to come on, but then just imagine if Burks comes on and you go get a guy from Oregon Franklin, and then you put Hop on the outside. You got three solid guys. That's going to make Will Levis and it's going to make the offensive coordinator very, very happy.
Yeah, and you mentioned Hop. I mean, I feel like that he had a good season. Obviously, it wasn't the season the team wanted, but he, to me, is an important piece for Brian Callahan and for Will Levis this year. I definitely am not even entertaining the idea of getting rid of him.
Nah, he needs to be here because if you look at what he did last year, if you look at the offense, well, who was one of the bright spots on the offense? It was Hop.
Yeah.
You know, everybody kept talking about that he was selfish. And no, he's not selfish. He just wants to win. So I'm glad that he's a great asset to this team. Everybody talks about him being a great locker room guy. That's the kind of cast that you want around. And then also, here's the thing. Say you get some young receivers in the draft. You can learn from a future Hall of Famer. So I think it's a great plus for having him in there.
Chris, appreciate your time as always, my friend, and we will talk next week.
Appreciate you, boss.
That is forever Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders joining us here on the program, and you can hear him all over our radio stations, of course, and we always enjoy his insight. Chase McCabe in for Jared today, a Chase and Big Joe afternoon edition in for Stillman & Company, and Stillman & Company presented by Jarrett Companies, Fire and Commercial Plumbing, HVAC Division, 615-515-1270, or at JarrettCompaniesInc.com. Coming up next, we'll put a bow on things, including my thoughts on the Predators from last night, here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
You disappointed in the response after Tuesday night's game? You're kind of disappointed in the effort?
Yeah, I think just disappointing the mindset since the break, really. I mean, I think the Arizona game, we didn't play very good for two periods and we're able to sneak something out of that. And we weren't ready to play. And it was evident tonight. We got what we deserved.
That was Andrew Burnett last night after the 9-2 Predators loss to the Dallas Stars. One of the worst games I've ever seen at Bridgestone Arena and one of the worst losses in team history. Chase McCabe in today for Jared Stillman, Chase and Big Joe in the afternoon, as Jared did our show earlier today. But listen, it has not gone the way that the Predators or Andrew Brunette or anyone in that organization have wanted over the course of really the last few weeks, even before the All-Star break. You know, I think the hope was that you go into the break, you rest, you clear your mind a little bit, and then you come back and you're able to get things going. They came back, they won 5-4 in overtime against Arizona. Okay, cool. That's a jumping off point. Well, then you go to Tuesday night, you play a game against the New Jersey Devils, and I know the score was 4-2, there was an empty netter at the end, but you know, you take a lead and then you let them battle back and you can't hold on to it, and they ultimately end up winning that game 4-2, and then you have an absolute, I don't even know if I want to call it a clunker, just the words I can't say, just a bad game, an awful game. And anybody involved with the team would tell you that. Like, nobody can deny that, that it was just a terrible, terrible game. And now, you know, as Barry Trotz comes on with Jared every Tuesday at 5, and he talks about the players are going to dictate what we do at the trade deadline. I mean, right now, what's happening is they're saying, yeah, well, go into sell mode. And quite frankly, that's how I feel. I think it's time. I think it's time to sell off some assets and do like you did last year and get some draft picks and, you know, some players coming back, some prospects. You don't have a ton to sell off that you would want to sell off. Obviously, Saros is in his own category, but you know, I think that's really going to have to blow Barry Trotz away for him to want to do that. But there's something going on. Like, this team just is not getting it. right now. And I thought this, you know, being asked, Brunette was asked last night about how much of this do you put on the leadership of the team?
How much responsibility do you put on the leadership of the team?
Well, it's disappointing. You know, I think it can only be addressed so many times. Either we're not taking it serious enough or we're not understanding. The response and the mindset is really disappointing.
And he keeps using that word disappointing, and then getting to the follow-up to that question, and this is the one that everybody's talking about, that, you know, I thought Brunette, he brought it on this answer, and he kind of needed to.
When you talk about the team maybe not understanding, are you talking about they're not understanding the urgency of the situation with regards to the playoffs, or are you talking about them not understanding execution points on the team?
I think not understanding where we're at or having trouble getting their mind around what's important. That's hockey. It's not everything else that goes around hockey. It's the game of hockey. And I don't know if we're understanding the importance of that our mind has to be in the game. It can't be in our vacations.
And I thought that was really telling, that our mind can't be in our vacations. So clearly in his eyes, as a guy that played over 1,000 games in the National Hockey League, is now the head coach of the Predators, that he feels like that some of the guys on his team don't have their mind in the right place. That's a problem. That's a problem in my mind, if you're feeling that way. Whether that's true or not, that's how the head coach feels. And so, you know, and I know there's some of you out there that now you're starting to point at him and you're saying that he's the problem and he's got to coach this team. Okay, you're right. He's got to coach the team. He's got to coach the players that he has. But they got to do the work too. And I see a lot of, you know, lacks of just lazy hockey sometimes, like bad plays. That's what I see. And I don't put all of that on the coach. The players got to go out there and give the effort. And it didn't help that Matt Duchene came in here last night and did what he did. That did not help anybody's confidence at all. Now, here's the other thing I'm going to say. We knew going into this season, I said this earlier, we knew going into this season, this was going to be a process, that they weren't going to sell off everything like they did last year and have these young guys come up and Barry Trotz officially takes over as GM. They fire John Hines, they bring in Andrew Brunette, and then go win the Stanley Cup. It wasn't going to work that way. And if you know anything about sports, not just hockey, you knew it wasn't going to work that way. This was going to be a process. Well, then here's what happened. Start off and then kind of get on a hot streak in November and December and going into the first of the year. And all of a sudden everybody's like, oh, is this going to be like 2017? I mean, we all kind of got into that. Like, okay, all right, here we go. Things looking good. But you had to remind yourself in the back of the mind, it's a young team. You have one scoring line, one line that you can count on. Philip Forsberg, Gus Nyquist, and Ryan O'Reilly. That's been the bread and butter of your team. That's where a majority of your offense has come from, a majority of your scoring has come from. And you've seen flashes with the young guys that did so well at the end of last year, but not consistency. And so this team is therefore, in my mind, inconsistent. And now they've come back down to earth a little bit. This is a rebuild, a reset, whatever you want to call it. They're in it. That's what Barry Trotz knew he had to do. That's why he made the tough decisions, like buying out Matt Duchene and trading Ryan Johansson and keeping some of the money, trading Matthias Ekholm at the trade deadline last year, you know, with David Poile still as the GM. They knew they were going to have to do these things. That's why he's going through this process of evaluating if he wants to trade UC Saros or not and get a really good return. So you got to be patient, too, with this process, that it wasn't going to get fixed overnight. And so I feel like all this finger-pointing at the coach and all this stuff, I mean, that's what fans do sometimes. But to me, that's not the way to go, because that's not it. Now, Brunette is, I think, having a harder time, you know, realizing that where he is with this team and that, you know, he coached Florida as the interim coach that year. That was a wagon. This isn't a wagon yet. It can be. Hopefully it will be when the process is done. But as I tweeted out last night, you got to let it bake. It's not done baking yet. That cake is still baking right now. So to me, what I would do is you go through this road trip. You can use this road trip as an evaluation point. It still should bug you that they've played like crap at home as of late. That should still bug you. But you can evaluate on this road trip and then make the decision, okay, let's keep this going and not sell off a lot. I still would make some trades if you're going to go that route. Or you can do what I would actually do, and that is accept you're not there yet and make phone calls and see what you can get for some of your assets. Saros has to blow me away. You're not going to, like, three first-round picks for Saros, I'm not doing it. I want tangible assets coming back that, you know, hey, they're pretty good, plus some picks. Like, it's got to be a big haul. But Carrier, I'm talking about Trennan. You know, I even think I'm talking about Novak, and I think Novak is probably of the guys in that ilk that you could get the most value for. You know, Tyson Berry, maybe, because you know, teams are going to look for depth on defense that are making a run to the playoffs. So I think all of that is on the table. And then, you know, keep some of the young guys and put them in there. You know, Gerionov hasn't worked out like I thought he would. So I would pull him out of there. You got Tomasino and Parsonen playing in Milwaukee, which I don't think is a terrible thing. Some of you do. I don't think it's a terrible thing. Get their confidence back and then bring them back up here and put the young guys together again like you did. And then if you don't trade Saros, I would shop Lankinen and then call up Askarov and let him back up Saros for the rest of the year and get him some playing time. So that's kind of where I'm at this point. They're back at it tomorrow against the St. Louis Blues. Max Herz will have pregame for you at 3 o'clock right here on 102.5. 106.3 The Game. That is going to do it for us. It's a Chasing Big Joe in the afternoon. Stillman and company filling in for him. He'll be back at his normal time at 2 o'clock on Monday. We'll be back at our normal time of 9 o'clock on Monday morning here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Have a great weekend, everybody. If you missed Jared from earlier this morning, the replay of that is next. 102.5, 106.3 The Game.